Take your Bible and turn, please, to the book of Jonah. The book of Jonah. Let me help you with that. It's about three-fourths of the way through the Old Testament. And the easiest way to find Jonah is go to Malachi, the last book, and then go back five or six books and you'll wind up at Jonah. If you have a problem finding Jonah, don't be embarrassed. I know a lot of preachers, Brother West, that have to look in the index to find Jonah. All right, Jonah chapter 1. Let me encourage you, please, to remain in your seat during the preaching to eliminate any unnecessary distraction. All right, Jonah chapter 1, verses 1 and 2 is our text. It says, "Now the word of the Lord came unto Jonah the son of Amittai, saying, Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness is come up before me." Thank you very much. You may be seated. It's interesting to notice that the first word that God spoke to Jonah was the word, arise. And that command is given three times to Jonah. Jonah chapter 1 verse 2, Jonah chapter 1 verse 6, and Jonah chapter 3 and verse 2. I believe that gives us an insight into the basic character of Jonah. I believe that basically Jonah was a lazy person. And whenever God wanted Jonah to do anything, He had to wake him up. Jonah, rise! Jonah, rise! Jonah, rise! Kind of like the lady who came to her helper one day, and she said, "Lena, don't you do anything fast?" She said, "Yes, ma'am. I get tired fast." Well, that was Jonah's problem. He got tired fast. And every time God wanted Jonah to do anything, He had to wake him up. Now, folks, you're going to find this principle in the New Testament. Whenever God gets ready to call a person to do a job, He never calls a lazy good-for-nothing. But He always calls somebody who is busy. Now, on the other hand, sometimes God looked down and He saw somebody who was doing the wrong thing, wholehearted. And He said, "There's Saul of Tarsus. He's wholehearted to what he's doing. I'll just change his direction and rechannel his vitality." Now, the principle is that God may get a hold of a person who's doing the wrong thing, but He doesn't use a person who isn't doing anything. I heard Dr. Bob Jones Sr. say this so many times, that when a person gets saved, his basic character does not change generally. In other words, if a person is a lazy good-for-nothing before they get saved, they'll still be probably a lazy good-for-nothing after they get saved. Excuse me. A woman who's a sloppy housekeeper before she gets saved, she'll probably be still a sloppy housekeeper after she gets saved. Why? Because we are told that 50% of the character of your child is instilled into that child by the age of 3. 75% of the character of the child is instilled into that child by the age of 5. You show me a willful, rebellious 5-year-old 10 years later, I'm going to show you a willful, rebellious 15-year-old. You know, God never looks down. And He says, "There's somebody who's the fastest texter in the youth group. So I'll call him to do a job for me." He never looks down and He says, "There's somebody who spends all of his time in social networking. I'll call him to do a job for me." No, He calls somebody who has been prepared. And he has to get direction from his parents. How many of you remember my song leader, Larry Brubaker? Larry Brubaker's dad was a bartender. This is interesting. Some of you remember the name Evangelist Glenn Shunk? Well, Glenn Shunk was a drunkard before he got saved. And Glenn Shunk was kicked out of Lester Brubaker's bar room. Lester Brubaker kicked him out. Of course, both of them got saved, and what a reunion. Well, after Lester Brubaker got saved, he told his boy Larry, he said, "Larry," he said, "I want you to be used of God. So I want you to take piano lessons." And I will tell you that there were many times when Larry would have been out goofing off with the kids rather than playing the piano. But Lester Brubaker said, I want you to be used of God. So, Larry plays many instruments. He can get music out of a fork and a knife. He plays many instruments, all derived from his piano lessons when he was an 11-year-old boy. And when God got ready to call somebody to travel with Ron Comfort for 50 years, he could reach down and get a hold of Larry Brubaker. Why? Because his daddy was instilling character into his child. Well, God said, Jonah, go to Nineveh. Now, the city of Nineveh was about 60 miles in its perimeter, had a population of upward toward 1 million people. And so God says, Jonah, I want you to capture that city for me. Jonah was a Jew. The Ninevites were Gentiles. His skin was a little different shade than the Ninevites. God said, Jonah, this way. Jonah said, God, this way. The bulk of our message tonight will be taken from Jonah chapter 1, verses 3 through 6. Will you notice, please, Jonah chapter 1, verses 3 through 6. It says, but Jonah rose up to flee unto Tarshish, underline this, from the presence of the Lord. And he went down to Joppa, and he found the ship going to Tarshish, so he paid the fare thereof. And he went down into it to go with them. Here it is again, unto Tarshish, from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord sent out a great wind in the sea, and there was a mighty tempest in the sea, so that the ship was like to be broken. Then the mariners were afraid, and cried every man unto his God, and cast forth the wares that were in the ship in the sea to lighten it of them. But Jonah was gone down the sides of the ship, and he lay and was fast asleep. So the shipmaster came unto him and said unto him, what meanest thou, O sleeper? Arise, call upon thy God. If so be that God will think upon us, that we perish not. All right, look this way. Now, Jonah, when he got away from God, he went down to Joppa. When the child of God gets away from him, there is only one direction for him to go, and that is down. Have you ever noticed how many times the adverb down is used in Jonah chapters 1 and 2? Chapter 1, Jonah went down into the ship. He went down to Joppa. He went down into the boat. He went down in the bed. Chapter 2, he went down in the fish's gullet. He went down to the bottom of the mountains. He went down to Sheol. He went down, 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 down. I'm speaking tonight on the subject going down, going down. Very simply, I want you to notice three ways that Jonah lost when he got away from God. Number one, he lost his joy. Will you notice the difference of verse 3 and verse 4, how they start? Verse 3, but Jonah. How's verse 4 start? But the Lord. All right, get it. Jonah's will was contrary to the will of God. And when that is true, number one, you lose your joy. You lose your joy. Isaiah 3 and verse 9, the show of their countenance does witness against them. Listen to me, young people. Listen to me. I can preach in a Christian school chapel in 5 minutes. And I can go down the row and show you every kid that is a rebel. I can show you every kid that is hooked on rock music. You say, how can you do that? Isaiah 3 and verse 9. The show of their countenance does witness against them. Let me ask you a question tonight. Are you happy? I used to think that Christians walked around with a long face waiting for gallbladder attack to happen. But I want to say the first thing you lose when you get away from God, you lose your joy. Psalm 51 and verse 12. Lord, restore unto me the joy of thy salvation and uphold me with thy free spirit. Now let me tell you what my pattern is. I do not come into the auditorium a half an hour before the service. My pattern is I like to be alone with God 1 hour before the service. And I like to search the heart of God to see what He wants me to preach. And when I get up to preach, I have several sermons or messages in my Bible. And I many times will come in 10 minutes before the service. I'll sit on the platform, put my lavalier mic on, and I'll watch people as they come in. And you know, I can sit on the platform and I can look over a congregation and I can tell you everybody's not right with God. Are you happy tonight? Are you happy? When you're right with God, there's going to be fullness of joy. Psalm 16, verse 11, "Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence there is fullness of joy, and at thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore." John 15 and verse 11. "These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full." John 16, 24. "Hitherto have you asked nothing in my name. Asking you shall receive, that your joy might be full." 1 Peter 1 and verse 8. "In whom having not seen ye love, in whom though now ye see him not yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory." Romans 14 and verse 17. "The kingdom of God is not meat and drink, but righteousness and peace and joy in the Holy Ghost." 1 John 1 and verse 4. "These things write we unto you, that your joy might be full." Are you happy tonight? Let me make a statement. A person who is not right with God cannot be happy. All right, let me turn that around. A person who is not happy cannot be right with God. You know, for 22 years, we pulled a trailer across America to keep our family together. My wife was involved in homeschooling our three daughters from kindergarten through the 12th grade over a period of 21 years. She is a candidate for the martyr's crown. But during those years, people would come to me and they'd say, "Brother Comfort, I feel so sorry for you. You're on the road 10 and a half, 11 months out of the year, and you're never in the same place 2 weeks in a row. And oh, I feel so sorry for you. You live such a sacrificial life." And you know what I'd tell them? I'd say, "Hey, the only reason you need to feel sorry for me, I live in a 40-foot trailer. I have three daughters, a wife, and a girl dog. And we only have one bathroom. And not nearly enough mirrors." Now, you can't imagine what it's like to live in a girl's dormitory. Hey, if you have boys, all you got to do is buy them a pair of black shoes and brown shoes and a pair of tennis shoes. They've got it made. Not girls. Have you ever heard of the colors mauve, taupe, periwinkle? Now, men, those are colors, and they make shoes those colors. And for every pair of shoes that make those colors, they make earrings and a purse to match it. And a man almost has to have an oil well to keep four females in shoes and purses and earrings. Have you ever been in a bathroom in an RV? You don't have enough room in that bathroom to change your mind. But I would go in there and I'd see three electric curling irons, and I'd see pantyhose hanging up everywhere, and I'd see female accoutrements hanging up. You can't imagine what it's like. Now, for years, I could not dress like I wanted to dress. I'd have to put on my clothes in the morning, and I'd go by the female tribunal, and they would check over what I would wear. They wouldn't let me wear stripes and plaids together. Now, Brother Andy could, but I couldn't, you see. And sometimes I'd see them with their backs turned, and I'd put on what I wanted to wear, and I'd go out the door and I'd say, "Hallelujah, I'm the head of my home. I'll dress like I want to dress." Have you ever tried waiting on four females to get ready to go someplace at the same time? Now, I've often said, when the fella said, "I can't go to the marriage feast, I've married a wife," that wasn't legitimate. But if he'd have said, "I married a wife, I'll be a little late," that would have been legitimate. And I think someday, Pastor, I'm going to write a book, Life in a Girl's Dormitory. Now, let me be serious with you. In the 63 years that I have been saved, There has never been a day when I've gotten up and I've looked in the mirror and I said, God, I'm so sorry you've called me to be an evangelist. Young people, I want you to know that I am not enduring what I'm doing. I am enjoying it. And I'll tell you what, after 3.5 months, Brother West, of not being able to preach because of physical problems, I was chomping at the bits. And I want you to know that I'm not doing this for a love offering. Man, this is my life. And the peer group's going to tell you, kids, if you surrender for the will of God, God's going to make you miserable. Let me tell you, the peer group will make you miserable. But in the will of God, there is fullness of joy. Now, folks, I've never been able to understand how that because of a 40 or a 45 minute message that I preach, somebody can get saved and their lives transformed. Their children get saved. Their grandchildren get saved. And it goes on from generation to generation. Let me give you an example of that. I was preaching years ago in Atlanta, Georgia. And a Georgia Tech student came to me. And he said, Brother Comfort, I heard your message on the holiness of God. He said, when I listened to it, I sat there with my mouth open. And he said, it was different than anything that I'd ever been taught. I thought that God was a grandfatherly type. He said, I finished the tape one time, turned it over, put it back in. He said, when it finished the second time, I was on my knees asking God to save my soul. I had forgotten about that. But 2 years ago in Blairsville, Georgia, I was getting ready to preach on Sunday morning, and a well-dressed, handsome man came in, Dr. Will Moody, one of the finest surgeons in all of Georgia. And when he came in, he told the pastor, I've got to talk to Brother Comfort. He said, I don't want to talk to him before he preaches because I don't want to get his mind off his preaching. So after the service was over, he came up to me and introduced himself. I'm Dr. Will Moody. He said, Brother Comfort, do you remember about 35 years ago, you were preaching in Atlanta, Georgia, and a Georgia Tech student came to you and said, I listened to your tape on the holiness of God, and I got saved. He said, you know what? He said, here's that tape. And he said, I'm that Georgia Tech student that got saved. I said, Dr. Moody, I said, can we get together? I said, I'd like to hear the circumstances surrounding your salvation. And so he said, let's get together on Wednesday. Tuesday, he had 14 surgeries. So we got together on Wednesday. And I said, tell me the circumstances surrounding your salvation. He said, Brother Comfort, I was in my frat house at Georgia Tech. And he said, my frat brothers were in the next room smoking pot and drinking liquor. He said, but I was in my room and I had my Bible open. And I was in tears. And he said, I got down on my knees and I said, dear God, would you please send somebody along to tell me how to get saved? All right, listen. A young man from a real life college ministry went around these fellas smoking pot and drinking liquor, knocked on Will Moody's door. Will Moody went to the door. The guy introduced himself as being from the real life ministry. He said, you know, he said, I've just been down on my knees asking God to send somebody along to show me how to be saved. He said, can you show me how to be saved? So the boy reached in his pocket. He said, here, listen to this tape on the holiness of God. He said, after you do, I'll talk to you about how to get saved. He didn't have to talk to him. He got saved listening to that tape. And after we got through that meal, he gave me an envelope with 16 $100 bills in it. 16 $100 bills. You know what? That money has long since been gone. But the joy of seeing Will Moody saved. He said his wife is saved. His children are saved. They're in Christian colleges. Nobody can pay for the joy like that. Young people, there's joy in serving Jesus Christ. Now listen carefully. Why can't the child of God be happy when he gets out of fellowship? Hebrews 12, 5 through 8. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh as unto you as unto children. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. Now if ye endure chastisement, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all our partakers, listen, then are ye bastards and not sons. Now wait a minute. That's strong language. I didn't say it. God said it. Now here's what it means. If you claim to be saved, and you get in a life of sin, and you are not chastised, you've gone through the motions, but you've never really been saved. See, I had a young man in Minneapolis come to me, and he said, Brother Comfort, I'm saved. But he said, I can't live the Christian life. It's too hard. I said, I'm sorry. If you are saved and you get away from God, God will chastise you. It is not He might. It is He will. Young people, God chastens in an area of our life to get our attention the quickest. Maybe there's a young man in here tonight that your God is athletics. And God may know the only way to get to your heart is to cut off a vital finger on your right hand. You say, God wouldn't do that. Pastor, 1986, I was preaching at Maranatha Baptist Bible College. The opening revival, the first night, I said this. I said, maybe there's a young man in here who did not come to train to serve God, but you came to play sports. I said, that's your God. And God may have to take off a vital finger on your right hand to get your attention. I had no idea what I was saying. The next morning, a young man came into Dr. Cederholm's office. He said, Dr. Cederholm, look here, look at here. He said, Brother Comfort preached to me last night. He said, I came to Maranatha for one reason, to play football. He said, my God was football. Last night when I went to work, God cut off a vital finger on my right hand. He said, He's gotten my attention. I was preaching in Okinawa. Pastor got up before his young people and said, young people, let me tell you what God had to do to get my attention. He said, I love baseball. I ate, I slept, I breathed baseball. He said, I was playing baseball one summer, and I hit a line drive single to right field of Frozen Rope. He said, I could see out of the corner of my eye that the right field was sloughing. And I knew that I could stretch a single into a triple. He said, I went around first base full speed ahead. When I came to second base, my foot hit the bag, my ankle twisted, and my kneecap went around in back of my knee. He said, when I got to third base, I was on my face, and the bone had come up through the skin of my knee. He said, God got my attention. When I was in college, there was a young lady on campus from Charleston, West Virginia. And I'll guarantee you that if a poll had been taken among the fellas, that most of them would have said, she's the most beautiful girl on campus, but God knew her body was her God. Young lady, you spend 2 or 3 hours a day in front of a mirror. You know how long it takes for God to fix that? That quickly. Well, in the summertime, she went out on a date. She had a tremendous wreck. Had over 200 stitches put in that beautiful face. Her face was covered with plastic surgery. Her mouth was all drawn over to the side. When she came back to school in the fall of the year, nobody recognized her as the same girl. Now listen carefully. There are two words in the passage in Hebrews 12. The first word is the word chastise. We could compare that to a spanking. Secondly, there's the word scourge. That's a whole lot more severe than a spanking. When Jesus went to Calvary, He was not spanked. He was scourged. Now, what is scourging? I have in my hand, I wish all of you could see this crack. It is the story of Becky Vaughn. How many of you know that story? All right, a few of you do. I was preaching 1986 in Greenville, South Carolina, along this line. And after I got through preaching, John Vaughn, the pastor, came to the platform. He said, "Brother Comfort rang my number tonight." He said, "Brenda, his wife, would you come up and stand beside of me?" He said, "Here is my wife, 60% of her body burned with third-degree burns." He said, "There's my daughter Becky on the front row, 95% of her body burned with third-degree burns." Now, in this track, in the corner, you see a 2-year-old toddler, beautiful. But in the center of the track, you see Becky after the fire. If you will notice, she has no fingers. Her fingers are scarred, covered nubs. She has no hair on her body. She had to wear a wig. My wife said that when she took her to the children's meetings, she had to be very careful when she helped her off with her coat, because if she were not careful, she would peel her skin off as she helped her off with her coat. And John Vaughn said, "Ladies and gentlemen, in 1978, I was a Jonah running from God." He said, "I put a can of kerosene in the kitchen, and my wife working at the stove ignited the kerosene, and the house became a gigantic inferno." He said, "There's my daughter Becky. 4 months she lie in a Shriners hospital in a coma, hovering between life and death." He said, "Ladies and gentlemen, every time I look at my wife, every time I look at my daughter, I have been reminded that I have been scourged of God." Now, folks, listen to me. If God put His hand on my life, that would be chastisement. If God put His hand on my family, that would be scourging. And I believe that the wise Christian will fear both the chastening and the scourging of God. So, number one, he lost his joy. Notice, please, number two, he lost his concern. Notice verses 4 and 5. The tempest was raging. The ship was rocking back and forth with the storm. Every man was on board the deck crying out to his own God. Question, where was Jonah? He was in the bottom of the boat, fast asleep. I want to ask you, is that not a picture of the world and the church tonight? The world is on board the deck crying out to their own gods. They're crying out to the gods of liquor, sex, pleasure, drugs, technology. But where are we? We're in the bottom of the boat, fast asleep. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 24. "Awake to righteousness and sin not, for some have not the knowledge of God." I speak this to your shame. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 6. "Let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober." Ephesians 5 and verse 14. "Awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light." Question. What was the sin of Sodom? You say homosexuality. You're wrong. You're wrong. Ezekiel 16 and verse 49. Listen, please. "Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Pride, fullness of bread, and an abundance of idleness was found in her and in her daughters, neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy." Do you know what the sin of Sodom was? Spiritual indifference. Do you know what the sin of America is tonight? Spiritual indifference. To me, the greatest paradox in the Bible is Matthew 24:12. It says this, "And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." That doesn't seem logical to me. It would seem to me like when iniquity is abounding, the love of many would wax hot. But that's not true of very many in this auditorium tonight. And we have gotten caught up in the idolatry of materialism. And that's all that matters. Often people come to me and say, "Chronicle your ministry through the years." And here's the way I chronicle it. In the 60s and 70s and halfway through the 80s, in our meetings, we would have an average pastor of 30 professions a meeting. Many times, as I preached last night, if I preached to 150 teenagers in the school, we'd have 25 or 30 come and surrender for full-time Christian service. But it's not that way anymore. It's not that way anymore. Hey, when I was in high school at Bob Jones Academy in the 10th grade, there were 1,200 preacher boys in 1954. 1,200. Hey, I was president of preacher boys in 1960. There were 1,000 preacher boys. You know how many there are tonight? Less than 200. Pastor, in the 60s and 70s, Bob Jones and Tennessee Temple had 2,000 preacher boys combined. 2,000. Today, there's no such thing as a Tennessee Temple. Hey, I would preach at Maranatha Baptist Bible College year after year after year, and I heard Dr. Cederholm say this, 95% of our graduates are in full-time Christian service. 95%. I preached there 4 years ago when my good friend Chuck Phelps was the president. I said, Chuck, tell me about your student body. He said, we have about 800 to 900. I said, how many are training to serve God? He said, less than 14%. My good friend Rich Tozier, graduate of Pensacola, he came to Troy Shoemaker, who's a good man. His parents and we go to the same local church in Shelby, North Carolina. But he came to Troy and he said, Troy, when you and I were in class, he said, we had 600 preacher boys on campus. And the 600 preacher boys were the leaders on campus. He said, is that true now? He said, no, I'm afraid not. He said, we have less than 200 preacher boys. Now, what am I saying? Where are the young men coming from who are going to say, by God's grace, I'm going to take Andy's place someday? Where are the young men who will say, I'm going to take Brother West's place someday? I'm 79 years old. I don't have much time. Isn't there somebody in this building tonight that will say, by God's grace, I'm going to take Ron Comfort's place sometime? I pray on Sunday morning for pastors. I let the first letter of each day be a guide as to whom I should pray for that day. S Sunday, I pray for shepherds. And I never get out that prayer list, but when I see most of those men are in their late 50s or older, and I think, where in the world are their replacements coming from? Young people, do you know 60% of the junior high kids of America have never darkened the door of anybody's church? 60%. 80% of the high school kids of America have never sat 1 hour in anybody's Sunday school class. Hey, do you know that there are 30 million teens today who've never darkened the door of any church? I'll preach to a Christian school in April. The school has been going on 7 months. And I'll say, all right, how many of you kids in 7 months have led a public school teen to Christ? You know what? I don't see very many times that even one will raise his hand. And today, every day you and I live, there are 22 people who take their own life. And God is looking for somebody to take the message. Young people, don't waste your life on making money. There's a place in God's service for you. Number one, he lost his joy. Number two, he lost his concern. And finally, in closing, he lost his testimony. Will you notice, please, verse 6. It says, so the shipmaster came unto him and said unto him, what meanest thou, O sleeper? Arise, call upon thy God, if so be that God will think upon us, that we perish not. All right, look this way. I want you to get this picture. Here is an unsaved shipmaster rebuking a saved Jonah. He comes down the bottom of the boat. He shakes Jonah and he says, Jonah, are you a man of God? If you're a man of God, what are you doing in the sack? You ought to be down on your knees. You ought to be asking God to save our lives. Here's an interesting thing. Do you know that everybody that was on the ship that day was praying? Except one person. The man who had the answer, Jonah, in the bottom of a boat, fast asleep. Now let me ask you a question. What is the most important thing you have in life? You know what the most important thing I have in life is? My testimony. My testimony. I protect that every moment of my waking hours. When I put a book on the table, I always sign it before I put it on the table. And I sign it slowly and legibly. Why? That's part of my testimony. I had somebody come to me with a Bible recently, and they said, I want you to sign the Bible. Here's somebody who signed it a few years ago, but I don't know who it was. I can't read their writing. That's part of my testimony, folks. When I talk to a couple, I don't look at the woman. I look at the man. I don't want anybody to say, well, Brother Comfort is flirtatious around women. I tell our preacher boys this, I only hug women who are related to me. I don't hug women who are not related to me. Now, sometimes I get caught in a bear hug, and they initiate the hug. But I don't do that unless they are related to me. Why? Because that's part of my testimony. I was coming out of a drugstore not long ago, and a lady said, excuse me, sir. She said, you dropped your lottery ticket. Lottery ticket. I said, ma'am, that's not my lottery ticket. I don't play that stuff. But I thought about that. What if I picked up that lottery ticket and I became an instant winner of $20 million? You know the problem with that? My picture would be flashed across the newspapers in America. Fundamental Baptist evangelist wins $20 million in the lottery. There's my testimony. There's my testimony. You don't have enough to buy my testimony. In closing, 2 Samuel chapter 14, David and Absalom have been estranged for 3 years, Absalom, the son of David. He moves back to Jerusalem and stays there 2 more years. Now it's been 5 years since he has seen his daddy's face. So finally he decides the time is right. He called his servant and he said, go to Joab, the camp, my father's host, and arrange a meeting with my daddy and me. I haven't seen him in 5 years. I've got to see him again. So the servant goes to Joab. Joab will not listen. He said, he won't listen. He said, tell him again. He comes back the second time. He said, we've tried twice and he won't listen. Let's forget it. He said, I'm not going to forget it. He said, I'll guarantee you we'll get his attention. He said, now here's my plan. You go out and you light a match to his barley fields. He said, I'll guarantee you that'll get his attention. Well, one day Joab went out and he was engulfed by flames. And he came running to Absalom and he said, Absalom, Absalom, why did you burn down my barley fields? And Absalom said, Joab, 2 times kindly and gently, I tried to get your attention. But you wouldn't listen. The only way I could get your attention is to burn down your barley fields. I wonder, am I speaking to somebody in this building tonight that God has spoken to time and time again, kindly and gently, and you will not listen? Are you going to make God have to burn down your barley fields to get your attention? In closing, here's the most awesome illustration I think I've ever heard in my life. Dr. Lee Robertson tells his story. He was called to the hospital in the early 70s in Chattanooga, Tennessee. There was a young lady in her mid-20s, Mrs. Clarence Lohner, on a sickbed. Clarence was standing beside her bed. Dr. Robertson was urging them to get saved. And Clarence said, Doc, we're already saved. He said, you baptized us in the baptistry at Highland Park. He said, well, Clarence, do you think maybe God's trying to get your attention? He said, you're right. And he said, I'll tell you what, when my wife gets out of this hospital, we're going to serve God again. 2 days later, Dr. Robertson was called that Mrs. Clarence Lohner, in her mid-20s, was dead. He was asked to preach her funeral. After preaching the funeral, he came out of the cemetery seated by Clarence Lohner. And Clarence was weeping. He said, oh, Doc, today, God's burned down my barley fields. He said, Clarence, I'll tell you what. He said, I'm preaching at a rescue mission service tonight. He said, you need to get your mind off this. Would you come with me to that service? He said, yes, sir, I will. So that night, Dr. Robertson preached to the drug addicts and the drunkards. And when he gave the invitation, only one person came forward. Clarence Lohner. He came before the crowd and he said, "Men, today I stood by the grave of my wife." He said, "The dearest thing I have in life is gone." He said, "I'm going to tell you why. Years ago, God called me to preach." He said, "I've been a Jonah. I've been running from God. But I'm here to tell you, God's taken my wife. He's gotten my attention. I'm going to preach." After the service, Dr. Robertson came to him and said, "Clarence, are you telling the truth? Has God really called you to preach?" He said, "Oh, I know that as clearly as I know anything in life. God's called me to preach, and I'm going to preach." He said, "Clarence, you know every Wednesday night we have prayer meeting. Would you do me a favor?" He said, "Would you come to prayer meeting, and when I preach and give the invitation, would you come forward and give this testimony?" He said, "We've got a lot of students in our college who need to hear your testimony. They're Jonahs like you were." He said, "I'll be there." Wednesday night came. Dr. Robertson sat on the platform, scanned the crowd. No sign of Clarence Lohner. He thought, "Well, he's lost in the crowd. He'll make himself known at the invitation." The invitation came and went. Still no sign of Clarence Lohner. All right, now listen carefully. The next day, Clarence Lohner drove in front of Highland Park Baptist Church with a girlfriend with which he had been having an affair during the life of his wife. He went around the corner on Orchard Knob. You know where it is. He parked, rolled down the window, and was talking to his girlfriend. A man put the barrel of a revolver through the window, squeezed the trigger, and blew Clarence Lohner out into eternity. The next day, Dr. Robertson was called to the funeral home. As he came in the funeral home, here was a casket with the body of Clarence Lohner, and the girlfriend seated right beside of it. After a while, Dr. Robertson began to put two and two together, and he realized this girl had been having an affair with Clarence Lohner even during the life of his wife. And when he realized that, he became incensed. And he went over to her and he said, "Young lady, do you realize you're partially to blame for this man's body being in a casket, his wife's body being in a graveyard?" He said, "You had no right having an affair with a married man, and when you stand before God, you'll give an account for that." He said, "Now tell me, what were Clarence Lohner's last words before his brains were blown out?" She said, "You want to know what they were?" She said, "I'll tell you." Quote, Clarence said, "God has called me to preach, but I guess I'm too wicked. I'll never preach." And with that, Clarence Lohner was out into eternity. Now, listen to the end of the story. Tonight, Clarence Lohner, Mrs. Lohner's bodies are in a graveyard. The girlfriend of Clarence Lohner that was raped, Dr. Robertson told me that within 6 months, she died mysteriously. Now listen. The last I heard, the murderer and the rapist was out of jail on parole. I never tell this story, Pastor, but what I think, is there a Clarence Lohner in this building tonight? "I've wandered far away from God. Now I'm coming home. The paths of sin too long I've trod. Lord, I'm coming home." Jonah, get off that one-way ship of disobedience. Let's bow our heads in prayer. Father, I have no idea to whom I preached. I didn't have this message even in my satchel when I came to this local church. I had no idea I'd preach this message tonight. But Lord, there may be a Clarence Lohner in this building. And Lord, there are several who are struggling with the will of God. And the devil's flashed dollar signs in front of their eyes. And I know that there's no joy in those dollar signs, but there's joy in being in the will of God. There may be Christians in this building tonight who have been chastened and they're on the verge of being scourged. I pray that they'll come tonight. For this young man who said, I want to be saved, I pray that he'll remember the rest of his life that on September the 19th, 2017, he was born again. And others in the building who may not know for sure they're saved. In Jesus' name.